services.
With that, we will open a work session on House Bill 2534 and invite Liz Beth to join us. Thank you very much. Did I say public hearing? I'm sorry, public hearing, I stand corrected. Didn't mean to scare everybody.
Chairman Shatterly and committee members, what I'll try to do today is go through, give you some of the basics of House Bill 2534, and then I have a few examples to go through with you to kind of put all this a bit in perspective. To begin with, what the bill is doing is it's changing the fundamental definition of property and property tax account. It's clarifying that any conversion of property personal to real property improvement or real to personal property improvement shall not be considered as new improvements, which would affect the maximum assessed value. So any of those conversions will not change that maximum assessed value. We're also specifying that each listing of property shall be reduced by the maximum assessed value of retirement for each listing of property. So we're basically going to have now listing of property. And this not a property tax account is going to consist of a variety of different of the variety of properties. So basically it's just important to realize that in the past with property tax account, what you had was various types of property classes. Now we're going to be specifying that each one of those be a different account. Now as property tax accounts are merged, the maximum assessed value of the merged accounts must be retain the same total maximum assessed value, and we're also specifying that the property tax roll must include the maximum assessed value for both land and improvements, and the improvements being buildings, structures, and fixtures. So in the past, and what we have under current law, is that the real market value is split out between land and improvements and not the maximum assessed value. So that's a big change from this bill. This bill also outlines the procedures by which assessors shall break down the total maximum assessed value into land and improvements if those values do not already exist on the tax roll. So some counties may already have preserved that breakdown between land and improvements for the maximum assessed value in 95-96 when that was the base year. But if they haven't, then it outlines procedures by which they will do that. It allows a property owner to appeal the determination of the maximum assessed value calculation into these property components. Now, what I've just described does not discuss at all Section 6 and 7 of the bill. They're not included because due to some consensus that you'll hear about through public testimony is that these sections could be deleted. Now, to just go over again what Measure 50 has, each property tax account has real market value for land and improvements. But and this total real market value for the property tax account then is a sum of the land plus improvement. Currently, the maximum assessed value is calculated at this account level, okay, not at the individual values for land and improvement. And again, to refresh everyone's memory, a property's maximum assessed value is equal to the greater of 103% of the prior year's assessed value or 100% of the property's maximum assessed value in the prior year. So we're always going to be comparing what is a 3% growth versus what was the prior year's maximum assessed value if at one particular time the real market value was below the maximum assessed value. There are exceptions to the maximum assessed value calculation for the following circumstances, and they are outlined in 308.146 subsection 3. So there are exceptions to this maximum value calculation for new property or new improvements to property, partitions or subdivisions, rezoning property and a change in use consistent with the rezoning, omitted property, disqualified from the exemption. If you're disqualified from any exemption, then your maximum assessed value can be reset, and any lot line adjustment that is made with respect to the property. So those are all the conditions in which maximum assessed value can grow beyond 3% a year. And again, with assessed value is the lesser of the property's maximum assessed value or real market value. And now, one mechanism or portion of House Bill 2534 was taking into consideration July 2000 Oregon tax court decision in which Flavorland Foods versus Washington County and Department of Revenue addressed the same issue about how maximum assessed value was supposed to be calculated. Was it supposed to be calculated as a land and improvements or at an account level, which would be the sum of the land and improvements? And so the court ruled that maximum assessed value should be calculated separately for land and improvements, but this tax court decision is under appeal to the Oregon Supreme Court.
Okay.
Okay. Now.
Are you ready to vote?
So I wanted to highlight a few examples for you. So you have one page that has two sides to it. And we'll start with example one, which is residential property. And I tried to make this as simple as possible. Each of with as many columns and lines as it has.
They were asking.
Well, I'm glad you didn't make it.
Just wait till example two. Okay. So with example one, to begin with, starting the reference year of 2002-03, and just so you're clear, I've kind of started this beginning with the benefits of Measure 50, and this is just something to take into consideration. Each property's individual maximum assessed value over its real market value is somewhat of an indication of the benefits that Measure 50 provides, because this property is not taxed as real market value, it's taxed as maximum assessed value. So in this residential property example, we have an internal ratio of this maximum assessed value to real market value of 0.74. And just so everyone's clear, MAV is the maximum assessed value, RMV is the real market value, and the AV is the assessed value. Okay, so as you start down here, to begin with, under current law in 2002-03, we have the real market value, and under current law, it's split out between land and improvements. And so in my example, it's $80,000 for land, $100,000 for improvements, so the total real market value is $180,000 for this residential property. And then right to the right there, you see the tax rates of $5 for schools, $6.50 for government, and $4.50 for bonds for $1,000 of assessed value. These tax rates are the same in both years and in both examples. So now what you see next is that the maximum assessed value under current law is just one value. There's one value for this residential property, and in this case it's $133,200. And again, that is a reflection of how much in 95-96 the real market value was, and then grown for the last 5 years up until, or last 7 years up until 2002-03.
At 3%.
At 3%. Right. That's right. So now with the assessed value, you see that the assessed value here is, again, the lesser of the real market value or the maximum assessed value. So in this case, it's the maximum assessed value, which is $133,200. Okay, now as far as the tax amount that we receive at this particular value level is $2,131 is the total tax. Now, if we move to what House Bill 2534 would do, is that with this bill, we still have real market value. It's split out between land and improvements. What we see is that we need to, assuming that the county assessor does not have the maximum assessed value split out for land and improvements, what we have to do is follow the procedures in it's Section 8 of this bill, and basically look at the portion that the land is of the total real market value versus the improvements, what portion of the improvements is of the total real market value. So in this particular example, I see the land is 44% of the total, and the improvements is 56% of the total. Okay, so what you do then with maximum assessed value, under this bill, you have to split out that total maximum assessed value of $133,200. And you split that out by taking the $133,200 times 44%, which would give you the $59,200 for land versus improvements, where it's $133,200 times the 56%, which is $74,000. Now, the maximum assessed value has not changed. The total amount has not changed. All you've done is apportion it to land and improvement. But now we have three values on the account for the maximum assessed value versus the one that you have under current law. Okay, and then with assessed value, then you compare again. You're comparing the maximum assessed value for land versus real market value for land. And in both cases, the maximum assessed value is less than the real market value. So that, again, the total assessed value is $103,200. The tax amount is still $2,131. Okay, so in this particular example I've given you here, having a breakdown of maximum assessed value to land and improvements is not changing at all the tax amount and the total assessed value. Now let's go one more year to just kind of see some of the growth that occurs on accounts. Again, I've tried to give you the example of a little bit different rates of growth, where the land was growing at 4% versus the buildings at 1%. So if land grew at 4%, what you then see is the real market value overall grows only 2%. So real land goes from $80,000 to $83,200. Improvements go from $100,000 to $101,000. And the total real market value goes from $180,000 to $184,200. Again, maximum assessed value just grows by 3% a year, and that comes to $137,196. And then you compare the maximum assessed value versus real market value, and again, the total assessed value is based on the maximum assessed value of $137,196. So taxes only grow by 3%. $2,195 is the growth in 1 year. Now, what you see when you break down House Bill 2534, again, in the following year, it has no change. No change on the taxes at all or the total assessed value. Okay? So this is a simple example.
Right.
Now let's try example two, page. Now this is very similar as far as the structure, and basically that I gave you again some pot with industrial property here is what we're considering. What you often see with industrial property is that this internal benefit from Measure 50 may not be as large as what you'd see under residential property. In this particular example, though, I did give you this particular account some benefit from Measure 50. So the internal maximum assessed value divided by real market value ratio is 0.78. Now, what you see with this example is that land is at $1 million, improvement is at $3.5 million for a total real market value of $4.5 million. And then the maximum assessed value is $1 million less, and it's $3.5 million. Again, the total assessed value is the lesser of the real market value or the maximum assessed value, and it's the maximum assessed value of $3.5 million. Total tax amount in this example is $56,000 in 2002-03. Now, again, we have to consider what is the breakdown then in separate out maximum assessed value into two more components, land and improvement. So what you see with this particular example is land makes up 22% of the total real market value. Improvements make up 78% of the total. And so when you multiply the $3.5 million times 22%, you get $77,778 versus the $2.7 million for improvements. So the maximum assessed value, again, stays the same under House Bill 2534 because all you're doing is portioning it out between land and improvements. It's still to $3.5 million. Now, and again, the assessed value, it now has to have two components, land and improvements, but again, it's still at the $3.5 million, the same as above. The tax amount is the same. So with House Bill 2534, you know, just portioning out the maximum assessed value to land and improvements is not in and of itself going to make any tax impact at all. Now we have to think about what other things may occur on the account and how this particular bill affects that. So if we look at industrial property, but we also consider an apportion of land. So we're saying that in 2003-04, what we have is an apportioning of land. Now, currently, how we view a property tax account, if there's a portioning of the land, maybe there's couple acres that are going to be portioned off.
Partitioned?
Partitioned, I'm sorry. So if it's partitioned, if there's a portion of the land partitioned off, then that means that the entire account, okay, is going to be affected by that change. And the entire account includes land, it includes buildings, okay, and any other real machinery that may be in the building. So those kind of issues you have to consider then. When you have then partition of the land, you're going to have a reappraisal of the land, but you also have a reappraisal then of the building. And that's under current law. So this is a case where if you have a reappraisal of the land moves is increased from $1 million to $1.5 million. And buildings, the value of those are increased from $3.5 million to $4.5 million. So in this particular example, your total real market value from the reappraising of the land, because you are partitioning the land, goes from $4.5 million to $6 million. And then what you see, where internally in 2002-03, in the prior year on this particular account, we had benefits from Measure 50. Okay, the maximum assessed value to real market value ratio was only 0.78. Now we're seeing that what you do in order to determine the maximum assessed value is take that real market value, that new appraisal value, times the change property ratio. Now, this change property ratio is for the entire county for this particular class. And in this case, it's industrial. So you're taking the industrial average county change property ratio, which is maximum assessed value divided by real market value. But it's for the entire class. It's averaged over the entire county. So in this particular example, I showed that this could very well be close to 1 for industrial property. So what that means then is that the maximum assessed value, there no longer is any benefits from Measure 50. Okay, in this example, you see that maximum assessed value equals real market value. It's at the $6 million. Okay, then your total assessed value equals $6 million. Then your taxes go up to $96,000. Okay, so you see you're getting right here a $40,000 increase just from partitioning off this land and then this reappraisal that occurs. And again, the reappraisal is both land and buildings because of the way we classify our property tax account. Now, under House Bill 2534, what we would see then with a partition of the land, you would since it would be just the land that is partitioned, and we are now classifying maximum assessed value according to land versus improvements, you're only going to be allowed a reappraisal of the land. Okay, so if there is, there cannot be then this reappraisal of any other buildings or structures. So what you see there is that land will go up to the $1.5 million like it did under current law, but improvements are only going to be allowed a growth that would be comparable to other industrial properties. And in this particular case, I just assumed it was 5%. So then you got improvements that go up to $3.675 million. And so your total real market value is only at $5.175. So the important thing to recognize here is that this reappraisal of the improvements is not triggered from a partitioning of the land.
Okay. So the theory in that being that the partitioning has affected the land, it has not affected the improvements.
Yes. And what we've done now with this bill is we've separated out property.
Right.
And so the property account doesn't just include, you know, a variety of properties all in one account. So what we see then with the maximum assessed value again is the real market value times the change property ratio. So it would be $1.5 million, the same as under on the real market value, but with improvements, those would only grow by 3%. Okay, so then that's the $2.7 million times the 1.03. So your total maximum assessed value only stays at $4.3 million. So then when you look at your assessed value, then your assessed value then is still based on the maximum assessed value of $4.3 million. And your taxes then are reduced to $68,862, which causes a reduction in taxes of $27,000 from current law. So this is really the essence of a particular case that applies to House Bill 2534. Now, as far as the overall revenue impact, you know, these changes in this bill are very fundamental to the property tax accounting system. But the overall revenue impact from this, from all these changes is really indeterminate. But as you can see, you know, with residential property, it's very unlikely that there would be much of an impact from this particular measure of just separating out land and improvements. And that's because there's usually a sizable difference between the maximum assessed value and real market value for residential property. This bill would also not have any change in the accounting of personal property or of utility property. The biggest impact is going to be on these exception values. And the issue of these partition properties is a good example of where there could be a pretty big tax swing with this type of separating out of maximum assessed value and making a tighter test of maximum assessed value. What you will be redoing, though, is requiring counties to basically calculate this maximum assessed value, which would require quite a bit of computer programming costs for the local counties and Department of Revenue to change those existing accounting systems.
All right. Very good. Thank you. Now we're ready to vote.
Did you have any sense of the numbers of instances that this particular last example might happen? Does anyone have any sense of that?
Yeah. Representative Carlson, I think I will try to look into that. I can look at how many partitions there were in a given year, and then maybe look at an example like this where also there was, you know, another plant or something that was had buildings and structures too. So, you know, I think it's going to be a pretty small number though every year, at least with the partitions.
Are there conceivable circumstances in which the application of 2534 could cause an upswing in tax liability?
Chairman Shetterly, that's true. I mean, and all we've given here is an example where there could be a reduction. There could easily be an increase, and I think you'll have testimony.
Okay, well, let's get into that.
Can I ask one deep question? Is one of the issues when to reappraise? That's the crux of this, or one crux.
I'm not so sure that it's when, it's what.
Yeah.
Right, what? When you reappraise, what you reappraise.
Okay, so,
is that kind of the heart of the matter here?
Representative Beck, yes, that's what I got out of the example that I was hearing.
But is that the, but other than just this example, is that the intent sort of the bill? I guess we'll hear more.
Let's ask.
Let me just, if I can, Mr. Chair, go further.
Sure.
If the assessor's coming out and reappraising property because something has changed, and they're expending a cost to do that, why would we not want to take advantage of that opportunity and have the entire property reappraised as long as somebody's there, and we want to make sure everyone's taxed fairly and to the, you know, the fairest or the current value of the property? Why would we not want to be reappraising? I'm trying to look at the principle here. Why you wouldn't want to? It changes, it's changed. If it hasn't changed, it hasn't changed.
We'll let the witnesses speak to that. In fact, why don't you come on up?
But is that the
question? Let's get you involved in the discussion. I think the issue is that under Measure 50, the reappraisal occurs upon a change in use. And what they're going to say is that if what you've done is partition the property, you've changed the use of the real property, but you've not changed the use of the improvements, let's say.
Right.
Let's find out.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Gary Carlson of Associated Oregon Industries, representing approximately 20,000 businesses across the state of Oregon. With me today are Larry Tappanen, to my right, your left, with Tappanen Group in Portland, an appraisal firm. And to my left, David Canary with Garvey, Schubert & Bear, law firm in Portland. Mr. Canary specializes in property valuation tax litigation. And this issue came before a a group of interested parties working on a variety of issues dealing in the property tax area between the Department of Revenue and our membership earlier last year when we had several meetings. This issue arose. So the assessors were involved and participated in those meetings as well as Department of Revenue. And this issue arose at that time. We pursued it and looked for a solution. This was the bill that Mr. Johnson and Legislative Council drafted for us about mid-year. I might say prior to the Flavorland case coming down a little bit later, following the conversation we had with Dexter in his preparation of this measure before you today. In fact, as I first talked to Mr. Johnson about this bill, I said, well, you know, perhaps, you know, do it right, what you're proposing ought to be to amend the Constitution. I said, we're not going there. I don't think that works. You all had some experience with that last session, trying to tweak Measure 50, and the voters didn't understand it for whatever reason, said rather substantial no. So the next best thing was to deal with the land, typically the lower portion of the total value of an industrial parcel, and apply this fix, if you will, to the land portion only, and leaving the improvements unaffected. What we're really talking about here is, I think, the protections of maximum assessed value, because the section of law we're talking about are exceptions to protections of maximum assessed value. And it talks about this partitioning or carving off and selling a portion of the property triggers then a revaluation, MAV notwithstanding. So what we're really talking about is protection of the MAV provision for these landowners. And I think that's really what we're trying to get at with this bill. So I think at this juncture, I'd like to turn it over to Mr. Canary and Mr. Tappan. And I know that Mr. Canary has prepared an example for you of a real life case or pattern after real life case, which brought this issue to our attention and now to your attention. Thanks.
Chairman Shetterly, my name is Dave Canary. I'm with Garvey, Schubert & Baer. I do a lot of property tax litigation. It does arise from a real case that we had that we brought to the Department of Revenue Assessors, and we tried to figure out a way of structuring or amending the current language that controls this. Under the current language, and I'm just trying to give you a part of the flavor for what the problem is, under 308-156, which implements ballot measure 50, it talks about what you do with a subdivision or a partition. That's different than a lot line adjustment. A lot line adjustment is where you have two parcels, separate tax accounts, and move the line between one of the two. This is where you have one piece of property and you actually divide it into a separate account. Under the current statute, under subsection 5, it talks about when this occurs, how do you determine the property's maximum assessed value? And the way this legislature determined that, it said the maximum assessed value determined under 306-146 that is allocable to that portion of the property not affected by the event. Well, the assessors, rightly or wrongly, probably rightly, said that when you divide one large parcel into two, both parcels are affected by the event. The next portion is in subsection B of subsection 5. It says, and how do you determine that, the value? Well, you take the value, the real market value of each section, and multiply it by the change ratio. As Ms. Martin Mayer has suggested, for industrial property, that generally in most counties is one. So essentially, both parcels are reappraised at the real market value because you take it times one and you get the real market value. On the board back here is kind of an example of what the problem is.
Can you move that
certainly
forward so we get a better view of that? We got to be careful because I think that's the board on which we created this exception value in the first place. I remember a lot of standing and erasing going on.
Mr. Chairman, I move that at the end of this session, we send that board to the Oregon Historic.
So, Chairman Chatterley, what we have here is a, let's say, a 300-acre parcel that has a building and machinery and equipment. And generally, as Ms. Martin Mayer has pointed out, is that this generally is going to be affected where we have industrial property, where we have a large portion of the value of the account in buildings and machinery and equipment. And let's say that a portion of that 300 acres was partitioned. Maybe it was partitioned for another owner to buy. Maybe it was partitioned for a county park or donated as a right-of-way. What then occurs is not only is the 1 acre reappraised, but the 299 acres, the land, is reappraised, and the building is reappraised, and the machinery and equipment is reappraised. So to answer Representative Beck's question, what occurs is the MAV protection that has occurred over the years is lost because everything is then reappraised at its real market value times the change ratio, which for industrial property in most counties, if not all counties, is 1. So essentially, everything is reappraised. And that is the problem. And so we attempted in our meetings with the assessors and with the Department of Revenue to say, well, you know, this is a small partition. Maybe we can redefine what partition is to minor partition. Well, then we went back and forth, well, what's a minor partition? Is it 10 acres? Well, if it's a 12-acre lot that's divided into 10 acres and 2 acres, that's a pretty major partition. We agree that if you have a 10-acre parcel and you divide it into 20 lots, that the maximum assessed value should be changed because those lots are more valuable as a subdivision. And that herein lies the problem, is that for industrial property, the way Mr. Johnson has defined it, only the land would be revalued. The protection for the buildings and machinery and equipment, the maximum assessed value would remain. So if everything was partitioned on that 299-acre parcel, but the buildings and machinery and equipment was left in one section, all the land would be revalued such as it would be appropriately in a subdivision.
Under the bill.
So that's what's kind of the genesis of this. I believe Representative Carlson had a question as how prevalent is this. We've had, I think, two examples, at least I've had two experiences with it. It's not an issue that occurs frequently, but I think as you see campuses like Intel, LSI Logic out in Washington County, this issue did rise in Washington County, as you see Hewlett-Packard's campus in Corvallis start to partition things off because they don't need that much, they're not going to grow as much, you're going to see this occur more and more often. And to answer Representative Beck's question, is it an issue of fairness? Well, maximum assessed value really isn't fair.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm the first to agree with that, I think. But as long as the citizens under Measure 50 have said we want protection from increasing assessments, then this does continue to give the protection that was envisioned, I think, when Measure 50 was passed. Thank you.
Ms. Canary, would the passage of House Bill 2534 create an incentive to partition? As we were talking about in terms of how prevalent is it, as opposed to current law, that's one thing, but I'm just trying to think my way through this. Would the passage of this create an incentive to make a partition like that?
Well, it in fact would, in the sense that, for instance, let's assume out in Washington County, Intel wanted to donate 2 acres, or the Nike campus wanted to donate 2 acres to a county park. They would be concerned that their whole buildings and structures and machinery and equipment would be reappraised under the current statute. So there would be a disincentive under the current law to do that. There would be an incentive to allow that to go ahead under this bill. Now, let's take another example. Let's assume that Intel or Nike wants to subdivide and make the land more valuable rather than as a campus or as a park. They want to sell it off for multifamily housing. In that situation, if they did that, that land would be subject to reappraisal. So the value would go up as it should, but their core part of their campus, their building, structure, machine, equipment would remain the same. I think that answers your question.
One other question before we go to Mr. Kampman, I guess I asked Elizabeth about the scenario in which the application of House Bill 2534 might cause an account, I guess the taxes to increase relative to what they would be under current law.
You know, I heard the question, Chairman Shetterly. I was trying to envision when that might happen, and I'm not saying that it wouldn't. I can't envision something like that right now.
Yeah, Representative Carlson.
I just have one of the questions you were talking. Okay, so you have 300 acres in your partition one. In this example, Elizabeth, that you've created for us, does this show the value of both partitions of the land or just the remaining partition? So wouldn't there be a tax separate from this, in addition to this, on the piece of land that was partitioned off that isn't shown in the example?
Yeah, Representative Carson, as far as the, what was the value of that little piece of land that was partitioned off, I'm just looking at what is the remaining.
Right.
Is that your question?
Right.
As you have under current law, too.
This is just showing the existing account. All right. So that would flow all the way across.
Mm-hmm.
Would there be any reappraisal of the land? I mean, when you talk about 1 acre, it might not make a whole lot of difference. But if you're talking about half and half or something, it might, right, or not?
Well, Chairman Shetterly and Representative Carlson, in a situation where you had a 300-acre parcel, and say you put it right down the middle, and you put 150 acres on one side, 150 acres on the other, and that's a major partition, both sections of the land would be revalued.
Mm-hmm.
So that if you had 150-acre parcel was divided into 50 lots, it certainly makes it more valuable, and it would be taxed at that higher value. What this only does is protects the revaluation of the building, machinery, equipment.
Right. Okay.
I don't know how you partition a building or machinery and equipment.
Yeah,
I don't
think you do.
We have that damage. No.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Mr. Tappanen.
Chairman Shelterly. My name is Larry Tappanen from Tappanen Group. We deal with mostly heavy industrials and special purpose properties. This case that Mr. Canary has put on the board is representative of one of our clients in Washington County called Puget Plastics, who actually had an increase of several $1 million added to their rolls because they spun off something in the neighborhood of a very small piece of land according to their assessment, which caused them to think twice about staying in Oregon. They came to me, and we went to AOI, and we tried to figure out just exactly which way we want to go on this. And as we developed some dialogue, we found that we had differences of ideas and what the intent of what the whole situation was. We took a look at that a partitioning could be voluntary. It could be that you want to spin off 1 acre. It could be on a eminent domain where someone takes a piece of your land without your permission. It could be on a gifting of a piece of land for a park. And in these instances, all of those things would trigger a revaluation as a partition. In the industry where you have exceptionally large tracts of land dedicated to present use and future use, changes in that future sometimes necessitate selling off some piece of the property or whatever, which doesn't interfere with the operation of the existing property, but just means that they are separating off something. And in this light, we are talking about maybe not millions, but in some cases, hundreds of millions of dollars differential. So when you take a look at that, you would take a look at a company who in Washington County donated a road and got increased, and you would take a look at people who are selling off portions of their property to other companies. Has happened around the state where now the portion that was was sold off, I guess revalued, but the property next to it, which might be an entirely different thing, but it's all in the same tax lot, such as a boiler house as compared to a, or a cogen plant compared to a sawmill. And you're spinning off the cogen plant, it triggers a revaluation of the sawmill. So there is some major concern about going forward about where this practice takes place, who pays attention to it, and who is monitoring it. Now, I have to say across the state of Oregon, not every assessing identity handles it uniformly. And there are people, industry out there, who are really curious as to how they are going to handle their properties in a cursory manner, such as spinning off a small piece, selling off a filled-up pond, log pond, or something of that nature, and trying to outguess what the assessor might do to them under current law. And so this effort is to more or less make the law applicable to what the intent was, not to penalize the existing property that is still functioning and remains a viable identity, and not give it a disadvantage in tax paid over its competitors.
Okay. Questions for the gentleman? I think I understand both from Elizabeth's summary and also from the staff measure summary in our files that there is, in this Flavorland Foods case, there was a decision of the tax court that basically announces that the law is what you propose it to be under 2534?
If I may, Chairman Shetterly, that is the case. At the time we drafted this, in fact, the time Mr. Johnson drafted this, we hadn't had that decision yet. We anticipated it. This was not drafted to codify the Flavorland decision. I want to make that clear, although it does, yes, sir, have the same effect.
Is that a long tax court opinion?
No, it's only about 4 pages.
I'd be curious. Either okay, I'd like to have copies of that available to the committee. I think it'd be.
What I can tell you, Chairman Shetterly, is that what that opinion does is simply define under Section 11, Article 11, Section 11, what was meant by property to which the 103% maximum assessed value is to be applied, and the court goes through an analysis of what had been the current property tax climate at the time Measure 50 was enacted in order to determine what the intent of the voters were. And the court said, well, the basis, the voters knew that at the time they voted for this, that the assessment was divided between land and improvements, and when Measure 50 came into effect, they probably still had the same intent that the Measure 50 3% increase or 3% limitation would apply to both land and improvements and not just to the total value.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I was just wondering, then, is that the catalyst for this bill?
No.
That ruling?
No, sir. In fact, Representative Haas, if I may, when we met with the assessors and the Department of Revenue, we hadn't even thought about this mechanism for limiting the effect of the partition. We were, again, focused on defining what minor partition was, came to loggerheads on that. Independently, we asked Mr. Johnson to take a look at it. He's the one who drafted it that way. And when I read it, I said, gee, it sounds an awful lot like Flavorland. But the genesis was not the Flavorland decision, although, as Chairman Shetterly has pointed out, it has the same effect. I can't deny that.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Just out of curiosity, then, why hasn't this issue come up in previous sessions?
Well, 99 would have been the first session to come up, and it might have just been a little fresh, I suppose.
If I may, Chairman Shetterly, Representative Haas, I think that's correct. When you recall that when the legislature sent Measure 50 to the voters, after they passed it in May, then there was a scurry to implement it, And that's when this one provision, under 308-156 was implemented. So that would have been implemented in late in the session in 1999. And so we met in, I think, early 2000 with the assessors almost a year ago, or over a year ago. And then now we're coming to you in this legislative session. So this is the first session we've been able to bring it to your attention.
Chair?
Yes, Representative Beck.
So I guess what the piece that's missing for me is when, under current law, the improvements are, what triggers the reevaluation of improvements now? Never? Or...
the exception events
that in here?
Yeah, it's on the it's in the under background on the SMS. That is new property, new improvements to property, partition, subdivision, rezoning, and changing use consistent with rezoning, omitted property, and disqualification from exemption.
So the assessor doesn't go out every 6 years and see whether the property has, the improvements have deteriorated or no longer worth what we thought they were 6 years ago, or in fact the improvements have maintained their quality and character and it's time to reassess them because they're the top of the market still and the market has changed and thus I'm going to put another value in. So that doesn't happen.
Right, that does not happen.
And that's as a result of Measure 50.
Mm-hmm. Chair Elderly, if you're, Beck, mm-hmm. if your question is in relationship to heavy industrials appraised by the Department of Revenue, there is a procedure by which industrials are reappraised on a cyclic basis. So that it is run through about once every 6 years or thereabouts, things are adjusted upward.
Or downward.
Possibly. I haven't seen many downwards, but I've seen many upwards. And in this case, a lot of times, the real market value will then goes above MAV, and then the assessed value drops down to MAV. On a partition, it would kick back up RMV, but it's just a cycle in which the evaluation of industrials goes like this, depending on where in the revaluation cycle you are at.
Just maybe a word of clarification, Mr. Chair, for Representative Beck. So to sort of reiterate what Mr. Tappan is saying is that in the circumstance that this bill addresses, it is sort of an exception. It is an exception to the rule. The rule being that from 1 year to the next, whether or not there's a physical reappraisal that says the real market value of this property is, let's just pick an extreme example, double.
Mm-hmm.
The value for tax purposes could only go up a maximum of
3%. Right.
This bill addresses the situation where an exception to that, this exception,
the partition occurs,
where the entire parcel is revalued and MAV is ineffective, has no effect for the land. So under this bill, but without the bill, the actual tax can go up substantially. In other words, there is no MAV protection, 3% protection.
Under your example, then, if the partition occurred and they went and revalued the building at double what it was for whatever reason, that could happen under current law.
Yes.
But but you're arguing it shouldn't because Measure 50 says things should only go up, land anyway, only goes up 3%. And if you hadn't partitioned it, even though the building went up significantly in value, you wouldn't be paying that increment in tax, or appropriate increment in tax, because you wouldn't be re-evaluated.
Exactly. Mr. Chair, one more comment I want to make sure you were aware of. As we talked about this bill 2 or 3 weeks ago, Department of Revenue, representative of the assessors, Mr. Canary, myself and Dexter Johnson by telephone conference call, I think agreed that Section 2 probably was unnecessary as well as Section 7.
Okay.
So the bill gets considerably smaller if 6 and 7 as well as 2 were ultimately eliminated from the bill.
Just for my own information, just glancing through the Flavorlands case, that apparently wasn't an exception value case, as I understand.
No.
But it announces the rule that you have these different
correct
units.
Okay. Did he just say Section 7 and 8 also aren't necessary?
6 and 7.
6 and 7.
6 and 7. And 6 applies it only in the future? I'm just curious, say this case is appealed, I mean it's on appeal, would this law affect that Flavorland case that's on appeal?
Chairman Shetterly, Representative Carlson, when Mr. Johnson drafted the bill, he was under a misconception that there was a problem with property that was real property being reclassified as personal property and vice versa. And we didn't bring that issue to him. So Section 6 and 7 reflect on this, not if you change something from personal property to real property, it shouldn't lose its protection, its maximum assessed value protection. That doesn't happen. The assessors, to my knowledge, have never made a distinction or switched things from real to personal and changed the value.
Okay.
Personal property generally kept as the same account or a separate account. So 6 and 7 address that. 2 defines as part of the exception value this change from real to personal, personal to real. And I, unless there's some example that I'm unaware of, that's not an issue.
So you take Section 2 out, and this bill doesn't even specifically address the exception value process. It just gets at it indirectly by defining these two different components of the value.
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. I think I'm beginning to understand. That's good. I appreciate the overview. We have the county guys. Next, if we want to, let's go three and three. Three on three. full court. looks like you guys have the height advantage. Especially if Gil joins you. Jerry Hansen, Ray Erland, and Bob Broman. Jerry, welcome back. We haven't seen you this session.
Thank you.
You are here to defend Washington County, is that right?
If I have to.
Whoever's first, go ahead.
Okay, Ray Erland, Clackamas County Assessor and Tax Collector, Representative Shetterly, and members of the committee. First of all, I'd like to just talk briefly about the effects of the bill and then maybe get to some specifics. And this is all pretty complicated information, but I'll go from a Clackamas County perspective. We have 135,000 real property accounts. We have 128 state-appraised industrial accounts. 57 of them, the real market value is already below the maximum assessed value, so that's what they're paying on the lesser of the two. So what I heard from the previous discussion was large industrial accounts was the emphasis of the bill, not the other 135,900 accounts in Clackamas County. Talking about cost to change the system, we don't have any idea what it would be, but it would be very significant. When you start, I mean, computers can do everything with about $100 an hour to pay the programmer and a lot of work. You know, what I would add, if you take a look at this example to the industrial partition, in looking at the example that was given, not that it wasn't a good example, but in Clackamas County, our industrial and industrial ratio is 0.768, not 1.00. So, and I don't know what the other counties are in the state. So this example, I think, at least in Clackamas County, far skewed the results of this partition. We don't reappraise the improvements in Clackamas County on a division of property. It was at market value last year. Why would I reappraise it? Because it's been divided. And that also includes residential property, and I'm talking about the improvement portion. If, in fact, the land value increased because of an upzoning or a downsizing or a creation of value, then we would change the land value, but we're not willy-nilly adjusting the improvement value, and we're not reappraising it because we feel it's at market value in the previous year.
Let me ask, did I understand, though, from the previous testimony that that's not consistently the case in each county?
Mr. Chair, Jerry Anson, Washington County. The Department of Revenue appraises the industrial properties, and I believe they're pretty uniform throughout the state, but if they reappraise Tektronix because it was divided up, you'd have to ask the Department of Revenue how that worked, because Washington County doesn't do the appraisal of the improvements, and so I can't tell you. But I don't believe that's true.
I would point out under page 3, line entries under section 4, if I read this change correctly, in lines 24, 25, 26, and so on, what I read that to be, if we have a subdivision, and we still have lots of subdivisions in the metro area in Clackamas County, that we would, in doing some math before we came down here and looking at this, say, you know, our low-end lots are worth $60,000, and if you took the change property ratio of, say, 76% times it, you end up with a maximum assessed value of over $40,000. Under this scenario, the way I read this, if we would limit the value increase in the land, all those new subdivision accounts, using the $60,000 real market value, roughly $42,000 to $44,000 maximum assessed value, which would be the assessed value, we would then have, under this example, we would have about one-fourth of that value, or about $11,000. So it would be an incentive for developers, at least from a tax standpoint. Well, what it would be, since it's a maximum assessed value and you can't change it, is you'd have subdivisions out there of very similar quality and value taxed very differently.
Of course, that's a consequence under Measure 50 anyway.
Well, it isn't currently, because we do put real market. Yeah, it is slightly. This would exacerbate it tremendously.
Would you rewind that and take us through that again slowly, starting with the piece of property?
Sure. You have a subdivision. Say you have a...
Well, before you have a subdivision, you have a single
10 acre, you have 10 acres of property.
Yeah.
Okay, so you have 10 acres of land, and you create, say, 40 lots.
Unimproved.
Okay.
So there's nothing to differentiate between land and improvements.
That's correct.
Okay.
And I'm just talking on the land value. And then what you do is, you know, put in the sewer and the water. But anyway, ultimately, in my example, they sold for $60,000. So we would put, as of January 1 assessment date, we would put $60,000 real market value on those new created lots.
Okay.
We would value them, real market value, and then looking at our current year schedule for this year, we'd take 76.3% of that to establish a maximum assessed value, which roughly would put it $44,000, $45,000.
Okay.
So they would be, on the tax bill, if nothing else was done, they'd have a real market value of $60,000 and say a taxable assessed value of $45,000.
On the unimproved lots.
On unimproved lots.
Okay.
If you followed the language the way I'm seeing this written in Section 4, it's talking about, I thought it meant you would not be able to change the MAV, therefore you would have to use the MAV of the previous, in my example, 10 acres. You could change the real market value, but you would not be able to change the MAV, so therefore you would have an artificially low MAV that would be far different than anyone else's property of similar subdivision lots.
Because of the language, it says, but the total maximum assessed value for affected property in all affected accounts may not exceed the total maximum assessed value the property would have had if the merger or change had not
occurred.
That's
correct.
Okay.
So in looking at this, and I'm just trying to keep it simple, it appears that we have, and I wasn't on that committee that they had, and I'm not sure of all the discussion, but it appears we have a very limited number of accounts that appears to be a problem. And we have probably a million, 1.4 million accounts in the state of Oregon that we're attempting to propose House Bill 2534 solution at a tremendous cost.
I will say, from what I heard of the overview of the bill and the testimony, if that's the effect, I don't think I'll let them speak for themselves. I don't think that was the intended effect, so I'll bet we can get at that, if that's what this does. But I appreciate you bringing that, at least as an issue to identify and clarify.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, if I might, I got a few things, and we basically came today to absorb the problem statement, try to figure out what it's all about and what how it could be resolved. We understand that Measure 50 never was perfect. It was, you know, as good as anybody could invent, I think. And I'm sure there are other taxpayers out there that have situations that, you know, we'd like to look at once in a while, but from an assessor's perspective, this is really a big hammer for what seems to be a very narrow issue. And reprogramming the system and changing the MAV in every property in the state and creating reductions in assessed value that will impact taxing districts that we don't have any way to project, I think is a pretty major way to go about dealing with this narrow problem.
Jerry, may I ask, though, if this Flavorland's food case is on appeal, if the tax court is upheld, are you going to have to do that anyway?
Mr. Chair, I believe so. That's why the AG is putting a lot of effort into that case, because it's an important policy issue. Total surprise to anybody that was involved in Measure 50 that I'm aware of, anyway. I don't know that anybody intended that, but
the court refers to its previous decision in, I haven't taken time to look at it, but Taylor versus Clackamas County, that seems to have been a precursor to the Flavorland, or at least underpins the Flavorland Foods opinion. So at least the tax court seems to have been going there for a while.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I've read the decision. I understand the tax court judge's rationale. I could probably argue it the same way. I wouldn't want to predict how that'll come out, but it certainly wasn't by design, in my opinion. But in this case, I guess. One of the reasons we're here is because this bill is such a far-flung venture into Measure 50, kind of reinventing MAV to start with, that we're hoping there's a better way to deal with the problem. Offhand, just listening to it today, I could probably suggest some things, but I might be a little irresponsible to try to do that right now.
Okay, but, we'll give you time.
So, other than that, I think, you know, if you have any questions we could answer, that we'd be happy to try.
Questions for?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Scratch. Maybe since you guys can help me understand this a little better. Under this example, I mean, do you think it's appropriate to be able to go at the point of partition to be able to go back and take another look at the improvements? Is that a reasonable thing to do, or for, you know, public and to expect that property be reevaluated at that time?
Or are you saying it's not being done?
Well, Representative Beck, members of the committee, in Clackamas County, you know, we feel our values are at market value. The fact that we're talking the improvement portion mm-hmm. only, the fact that they're partitioning the property doesn't say, oh, well, let's take a look and mm-hmm. see if it's at market value. That's not what we do.
You don't?
No.
But other counties, or the state, I guess the state.
Well, I don't, you know, it was brought
Somebody
up,
must.
There. It was brought up, that there might be two or three examples. Again, I don't know what all county assessors do, but I would tend to think that most, if not all, don't take it as an opportunity, if that's what they wanted to call it, to revalue. Again, resources are scant. We use a comprehensive sales analysis system to analyze the market value of properties on an annual basis. We have over 10,000 sales in Clackamas County alone that we look at, and we feel that we're getting pretty darn close to market value on an annual basis January 1 of every year. So we never do this. Do you do that in Washington County, Jerry?
Mr. Chair. To be honest with you, I'm not sure. I mean, I'm the first thing I'm going to do when I get back home is check into it. But, you know, typically when we talk reappraisal, we're talking about the real market value values, not the maximum assessed values. And, you know, there's a real major distinction there. Real market value, of course, is dictated by the market, and maximum assessed value is dictated by the legislature, by the Constitution. It's an accounting thing, and there's some real clear-cut approaches to how we can add value to the role under the Constitution, under the statutes. And I
if you're doing this on an exception basis, you would be doing it for the purpose of adjusting the MAV.
Yeah, and the you know, I can think of situations, for example, when you have an exception, sometimes you'll have three different types of exceptions on one situation where you might have a property that is being divided, being rezoned, being annexed, right. being farm deferral coming off of it. Uh-huh. And all those things might come into play, and each one of them has a little different approach in terms of putting an MAV on that new property. So
I think 2534 wouldn't say that you couldn't put a new MAV on both. It just you'd have to approach both the land and the improvements.
Right. And one one example I can think of that's going to come into play in Washington County quite often is the issue of rezoning. We don't add value to MAV just because the property is rezoned, but if the use changes, then we do. So you could have a rezoning, and then you could have a year later the property becomes subdivided and the owner changes the use because they bought this piece of property from Tektronix and turned it into something else. So it's really, you know, a little bit complex, and I've got a specialist on my staff that's all they do is try to figure out exactly how to maintain the MAV on properties. So, in fact, I have two. You know, any property owner has the right to look at it and ask us how the heck we did it. And it's not always real simple. So it's hard to respond.
Oh, I understand. That's why this is a public hearing to get these things aired, and then we'll see what we can do in putting them together. Mr. Roman, did you want to say anything?
Chairman Shetterly, in the committee, I just wanted to add back when talking about this particular example reiterates in some ways that typically that would not, one, that type of a property would be valued by the Department of Revenue. You know, we receive those values on an annual basis. We're not going to revalue that property. And to some extent, we're going to rely on the fact that the property was valued correctly the prior year in order to approach a partition situation. So, you know, again, we don't look at that as an opportunity to go out necessarily and revalue property, but we do approach it as to how we have to handle the accounting for the exception value.
So if I could understand better then, or maybe make sure I understand your objections, apart from Mr. Erlin, your concerns about Section 4, your issue with this bill is not so much that it stops you from doing something that you're doing as it is the cost that it imposes to change your computer systems and just to track all of this. Really, that's what it boils down to.
That's correct.
Okay. Well, that helps.
Chairman Cheney, and additionally, I think, again, none of us have had a lot of time at this point to look at the potential impact of this bill because it's a very far-reaching or could have some very far-reaching impact, and we haven't really been able to determine our administrative cost as well as any of the other costs associated with what all of the changes may result from at this point. But I think that it's obvious that, you know, what they're showing here is a problem, and you know, what I think our intention is to look at how that problem might be addressed in maybe not so far-reaching a manner.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. Appreciate the discussion. we've got a couple of our Department of Revenue friends here. Can you step up for just a second?
Yeah, whichever one of you.
I guess the question would be, everyone seems to be pointing at the department ultimately at this thing. For, you know, it it's not us, it's them.
What else is new?
Chair Shutterly, members of the committee, I admit I'll take all responsibility for the problem for the department. No, actually, thank you.
I'm sorry, for the minutes. Please.
The records, my name is John Phillips with the Department of Revenue, Property Tax Division. I can answer questions or I prepared some testimony, but most of what I had prepared has already been said. I have some concerns about the bill. I was in the conversations with the proponents, and I think we agree that there is an issue here, and we agree that we don't have a solution yet. As was mentioned, it's a very large solution for a very small problem, and I think our intention is to continue to work with everybody and try to find a solution. And part of the crux of the problem is that the CPR, the change of property ratio, is 1 sometimes. Apparently it isn't in Clackamas County, but for many counties it is. And so if it was more like a residential situation, then we wouldn't be having this. It wouldn't matter if the whole property was revalued, because it wouldn't increase the maximum assessed value to the extent that it would under a change of property ratio of 1. And so when you have a property that is changed, such as the one in the example, you've got an elimination essentially of the Measure 50 rollback. Mm-hmm. There's a rollback that exists. All of a sudden they have a small partition. The rollback for these properties disappears. So I agree that's the problem.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Jim Maneri of the Department of Revenue. It appears to me that the issue around revaluing is sort of sidetracked you. The real question, and this example brings it up, is, and let's assume the department, this is an industrial, and the department's put a value on it. And if you look at it, the taxpayer for the machinery equipment and the building and the main part of the track is having, at this point, some protection, that their market value is above the maximum assessed. And so the Measure 50 limit is giving them a lower assessment. What the example does is that because they split off a little piece of land to give to the as a park or whatever, that you take the existing value. You don't have to go in and revalue it, because it's already above the MAV that's calculated. You just use that and run your MAV right up to whatever it is. Now that's the whole case, is that Measure 50 is giving you some protection from the real market value, and when you go through this partition, then you can just go in and recalculate the MAV based on whatever the market value you have on it now. You don't have to go in and revalue it. It's really whether you're in this case, you get to go in and recalculate the Measure 50 limit for the property. And that's why, that's in effect, I think, the solution is, well, let's consider the land and then the improvements right. as separate, so that if you split off the land, you only get a recalculation of the land portion of all the property rather than everything. I certainly agree with John that we've been trying to find a solution to this that would address this narrow case rather than a solution that affects every property in the system. And that's sort of the challenge. If we could present that, if you think this is a reasonable policy, that at least you'd have a solution that's geared to the problem.
Okay. Well, we'll look for one. Representative Hess.
Mr. Chairman, this may be a question for you, being a lawyer, and I'm just wondering how
he
you...
He is, too.
Okay. How would this play out if there was no legislation, if this tax court ruling is upheld? Would that effect then become the new rule, the new law?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Hess. The court case is interpreting the Constitution. So if the decision of the tax court is upheld in the Supreme Court, then that is what the Constitution means. And that will be the effect. You will get a split automatically then on the calculations.
And that'll be across the board on all property
across
types.
The board.
Representative Carlson?
Was what I heard you say correct in that it is the Department of Revenue that actually puts the value on industrial property? I heard some mixed messages when the county folks were up. Who actually determines that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, what happens is the department puts the value on the industrial, the building and the machinery and equipment, and then usually the county puts the value on the land, but we send the value to the county and they calculate the maximum assessed value because it's based on county stuff. So all we do is the value piece. The calculation that's critical here happens at the county level.
So if this were to happen and they were to adjust the MAV, they would adjust it according to whatever value you sent to them?
That's correct.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that. I want to bring any other questions for these two? We're not going to get this solved today, but it's an excellent discussion. I want to bring back Gary Carlson. Gary sends me notes as he has a response to Mr. Erland's concerns about Section 4. Let's go ahead and get that on as long as we've raised that today. This was the subdivision question.
Mr. Chair, Gary Carlson again, Associated Oregon Industries. I think Mr. Canary can respond to Mr. Erland's concern about Section 4.
A couple of responses, if I may,
yeah.
Mr. Chair. First of all, Clackamas County and Washington County do things differently, and I think as Mr. Kapanen testified earlier, what we're trying to find is some uniformity in the manner in which the counties do that. Second of all, there was an issue brought up as to inequities, how this bill would operate, and I believe Mr. Erland testified using the example of a 10-acre parcel divided into 40 lots and $60,000 apiece, applying the change ratio would be somewhere around $44,000.
Mm-hmm.
Under this, and he said then under this bill, you couldn't change the MAV for the total 10 acres. That's incorrect, in my opinion, for the reason that when you look at the definition of property in Section 1, it's deleted where it says all property included within a single property tax account. Mr. Erland would be absolutely correct if the italicized portion of Section 1 on line 9 were left in, but where we've substituted definition of property to mean each separate listing of property for which maximum assessed value must be listed on the assessment roll, then you would be able to change the MAV for the land because it's separately calculated, but not change the MAV for the improvements because they're separately calculated. So that's my second point.
Okay.
The third point is, was already raised by Mr. Maneri, and that is the improvements for industrial property are appraised by the Department of Revenue. That is the real market value. It's the county that determines what the maximum assessed value is. So there is already a real market value calculation of the buildings, land, and the buildings and the improvements by the Department of Revenue. So it's really not a reappraisal, as Mr. Maneri said. It's a question of whether you maintain the protection of MAV, the building and structures, or you go up to the higher assessed value. My final point is there was a discussion about there'd be lots of change in programming and that this would be a major issue. I can't address that technically, but let me point out to what the programming I perceive is you have to add an extra line in the property tax bill to account for the MAV for land as well as MAV for improvements. The way the current property tax bill that you and I receive currently states, it has land separated out and its real market value. It has improvements separated out as real market value. And then it has the total real market value. And then the next line is the assessed value. And the assessed value is either the MAV of the total account or the real market value. I'm not an assessor. I have to deal with this every day, but it seems to me that the only thing that's added then is a line item separating that MAV between land and improvements. The last section of the bill, Section 8, provides the assessor with a mechanism without having to go clear back to 1997 and calculate MAV as it progressed each year. The bill, Mr. Johnson, has provided that you simply separate that MAV between land and improvement based upon the ratio of land and improvements of real market value. Initially, it will take some time to do that, but it's simply dividing that MAV between land and improvements. That may take a lot of programming. I don't know, but it seems to me that's all that's required to do that. So those are the points I'd like to make in response. Thank you.
Jerry has made his way to the on-deck circle while you've been swinging there. Let's. Okay.
Well, Mr. Chair, I just wanted to correct previous testimony because there would be a lot of programming to do. The end result appearing on the tax bill is the end result of a lot of calculations comparing market value to real market value to maximum assessed value. There could be properties with a special assessed maximum assessed value. We haven't even talked about that, but the computer has to figure out the lowest for land and buildings under this scheme and then add the two together to come up with a new MAV. So there's a lot of internal comparisons that are going to take place before we get to the tax bill.
I'll take the word for it. I got. Okay. Well, thank you again, everybody, I think, for scintillating dialogue. Any other last closing questions? We'll have some conversation about this and be back. All right. If nothing else, then we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2534 and stand adjourned.
is, and